Good morning. Good morning. We're going to get started here. We can get folks settled in. I am calling to order this meeting of the House Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the new co-chair of the committee, along with my colleague and classmate, Chair Dave Baker. Good to be with everybody today. We're transitioning a little bit into this new phase of sharing things. Members, today we're going to be hearing four bills total from Representative Agbaje, which include a couple grant bills and several more as well from other members. And that will be quite a bit of what we'll be doing in the next few days. We'll talk further about that at the end of the hearing and hear from Chair Baker as well. But we will get going with a motion to approve the minutes. I could potentially ask Chair Baker. Chair Baker?
Mr. Chair, happy to approve the minutes as presented in our packets.
Thank you so much. Mr. Chair. Are there any additions or corrections, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes. These are for our March 13th meeting. Chair Baker's motion, please say aye if you're in favor.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That is the first motion of the day, and that passes. Our minutes are approved. Yes, there we go. All right, so let's bring up Representative Agbaje then for her first bill. And the first two bills on the calendar, members, relate to the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. We heard a presentation from the board several weeks ago under Chair Baker. We heard a bill from Representative Zalesnikar relating to the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. Now we're going to hear a couple of other bills from Representative Agbaje. And I will ask, Representative Berg, if you don't mind, to move House File 339 to bring that before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remove House File
339
to be before right. The committee.
And just to clarify, members, the plan for all the bills today is simply to lay them over. Just want to bring them formally before us. And so, Representative Agbaje, if you can present your bill, and then I think you're going to have a single testifier. And I don't believe there's an amendment, though. I often mess that up, so correct me if that's wrong. Otherwise, please dive in.
No, I don't think I have an amendment, Chair.
Okay.
Not that I know of, I'm sorry.
Then please present your bill.
All right. Thank you, members of the committee. Thank you, Chair. So I have a couple of Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board bills you heard earlier. So this one, HF 339, pertains to resources for the training requirement in the law. So this bill provides $1 million over the next biennium in one-time funds to pay for training of nursing home workers by a certified worker organization about their workplace rights under the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. So just as a way of background, this board was created in 2023, and in 2024 it issued two rules with minimum labor standards for the nursing home industry. One requires time and a half pay for each of the 11 state holidays, and that rule is now in effect. The other sets a minimum wage for the industry and is contingent on funding from the legislature. So these are the types of subjects that workers should receive training on to fully understand their rights. Under the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board statute, all workers are required to receive 1 hour of training about their rights every 2 years. And that training must be conducted by a certified work organization and use a curriculum approved by the board. The board has already approved a training curriculum and a process to certify organizations to do the training. And that training will include information on the pay and benefits workers are entitled to under the board rules, how they can enforce those rights, how they can participate in the board process, along with other topics. And so while the statute provides for paid time for the workers, it made no provision for the trainers. And so we expect that in homes where workers are currently represented by a union, the union will probably want to provide that training for their own members. But since there are other places where unions only cover about a third of the industry in that workforce, so for the non-union organizations, this $1 million would provide a resource for that training. There are a number of worker organizations that do this work, and they would be the ones that would be eligible for this funding to provide training across the nursing home industry. And so with that, I do believe I have a couple of testifiers on this one, and they can talk more about the benefits of the training and the resources that this would provide.
Okay, I've got one testifier listed at least, Travis Berth, if you can make your way up to the front. If there is a second testifier, that person can come on up as well, just to keep ourselves on track. And please introduce yourself, identify yourself, and then proceed with your testimony. And I'll ask you to keep it to just a couple minutes if you can, as we're keeping ourselves on track.
Thank you, Chair and the committee. My name is Travis Berth. I live in South St. Paul.
I am a server and a cook at Serenity Care Center. I am on behalf of my union, SEIU Healthcare, Minnesota and Iowa. Our union represents about 50,000 healthcare workers around the state. We work in hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and self-directed home care. We support HF339 because of our industry, and your money will work better when workers know their rights. I started working at Serenity in December of 2020. I was one of the few to start in the middle of the COVID epidemic. I thought boot camp in the U.S. Army would be the worst experience of my life. Boot camp was not that bad compared to working in nursing homes that does not have enough staff. When I worked weekends, we would often just have two servers for two whole buildings. Together, we have to feed 160 people. Residents get angry and would yell at the staff. I don't blame them. We feel miserable for being late. Things have gotten a little better since COVID. Money from the legislature has helped, but so has giving workers more say through the Nursing Home Standards Board. Because of the board, we got time and a half for the first time on President's Day. I think the prospect of the statewide minimum wage helped me go from $17 an hour to $22.50 an hour. But the nursing home didn't just pass along the money to us. In fact, last year my coworkers joined the largest ever one-day strike in Minnesota nursing home workers. Just Friday, we filed another 10-day notice, and I could be on strike again next week. This bill is about giving more workers the knowledge of their rights and the power to enforce them. Just because you fund nursing homes and just because the law or the board tells employers what to do with it does not mean the money winds up in our pocket. For example, we got our first holiday pay for President's Day. Our employers failed to pay us time and a half on that day. It was an honest mistake, and it's getting paid back. But workers had to point it out and demand that it get fixed. Last year, we had a case where a worker was unpaid for over 2 years. We had to win her $4,000 in unpaid wages. For a non-union worker, it's harder to speak up. The training they get from this bill will let us know they are protected. More importantly, without the training funded by this bill, many workers won't know they are entitled to holiday pay and minimum wages. Without the training, it's too easy for the employer to shortchange them. I am not a policy expert, but I can tell you what it feels like to be on the floor of a nursing home. We don't get treated with respect. Our managers pay us as little as they can and get away with it. Our administrators turn over even faster than our staff. The problem is not just a lack of funding. The business press says a lot of people are making money from nursing homes. More of that money should go to workers on the floor. We know there are good people in management. They face many of the same challenges that we do, but things work better when workers have a voice on the job. This bill would give more workers a stronger voice. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. Representative Bajaj, it sounds like you have a second testifier you were thinking?
I don't think so, no.
Perhaps not, okay. Anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill? And not seeing any, so then we'll close testimony. And then member questions or comments. Representative Zelizikar.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Bajaj. My question is, are you aware that last session I offered a bill for $1 million to restore fine money to the nursing homes because they were fined $1 million during COVID for following the procedures that this body set, which was set by the CDC. So when it was COVID times, if it was 14 days, 10 days, 7 days, the facilities followed the protocol by the state of Minnesota. Are you aware of that bill from 2 years ago for $1 million to restore for fines during COVID?
Representative Bajaj.
Chair Pinto, Representative Lesnikar, I am not thoroughly familiar with that bill, and I'm not entirely sure the connection you're trying to make.
Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And Rep. Bajaj, the connection is that the $1 million that's in this bill is directly the same amount of money tried to get 2 years ago for the facilities to restore funding so that they wouldn't be penalized for things that were of no control. They are the only agency that was fined during COVID for an expectation of having outcomes as if we weren't in a pandemic. And so I agree, it's disrespectful to the workers in the kitchen. I worked side by side with them all through the pandemic and for 40 years. And so that was attempted to do 2 years ago and voted down by the majority party, to the same amount of money to restore to the nursing homes so that they would have sufficient restoration for something that was of no fault of their own.
Representative Abaje, comment?
Chair Pinto, Representative Lesnikar, I understand your frustration on that. I think this $1 million is a different set of money to go towards the Workforce Standards Board that probably wasn't in place during COVID times. Actually, it wasn't in place during COVID. So this million is specific to the training requirement that's in the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. So,
Representative Lesnikar, anything else? Okay. Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I want to just maybe address the testifier. And again, I'm so sorry that he's so miserable working where he's working. It sounds really horrible. And I don't know why he's still there, and I hope it gets better. I can tell you that what I've seen is I'm not sure that the Workforce Standards Board is going to be the answer to that. I think that what's going to take place is more funding, more reasonable collaboration. Right now we're facing a very significant governor's 2% cap. That should light up everybody. That's a really big deal to not get more funding to the nursing homes. I think the reason Mr. Berth, if I said his name right, got a nice increase is because we fought hard for the last 2 years, $300 million to get to the nursing homes. We don't care if they're union or non-union. We don't care. We know they're underpaid. But we fought to the very end of that session to make sure that those nursing home workers got treated with respect. You know, I'm concerned that the nursing home makeup of the board is already talking about further strikes that we just heard this morning. It should be very alarming to anybody sitting here that if the direction of the standards board is to encourage and to sort of advocate for, we need to go on strike. Folks, we are the purse holders of these folks. We need to do a better job. We need to fight back on the governor's budget. And I'm concerned that where we're going with this is not at all where we should be going with this. And again, I know this is being held over. We're going to talk about this. But my questions for the author, I guess, is, you know, as we consider training is a big, important thing. I agree with that. I just want to know is, you know, for the working home workers there, does your bill include expanding those who can train nursing home workers under the standards board to also include provider organizations, not just unions, but other provider organizations like the Long-Term Care Imperative or Leading Age? Is that something that they do because they do training already? So does your bill include all those providers, Representative?
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, Representative Baker. So the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board and the Executive Director of the Board have been working on criteria for a workforce organization. As long as they meet those criteria, they could be eligible for the funds to be able to train. So ideally, those are probably going to be organizations that work more closely with workers rather than some of these long-term care organizations. But if that type of organization meets the criteria that is put out there by the board, they would be eligible for that funding to be able to do that training too.
Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think you're saying it's just really for the unions. Is that right?
Representative Abaje?
Chair Pinto, Representative Baker, that is not what I said at all. I said that there will be a criteria that will be put forward by the board. Whoever meets that criteria would be eligible for the funding.
Okay. Thank you very
Chair
much.
Baker,
that's all I have, I think, for now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Agbaje, for bringing this bill. And we started talking a little bit about the Nursing Home Standards Board a few weeks ago, but I think as our testifier showed, you know, what we know is we have an imbalance of power in the workplace. And so the idea of strikes or negotiation, all of those things are both legal and important ways that our workers exercise their power. What this bill is about is ensuring that those workers know their rights. And as we have seen in lots of places in this committee, we hear folks come in, there's lots of places where people don't even know the rights that they have. And so I just really appreciate the bill. It's $1 million. It ensures that workers are trained. The thing that I think is important that we're talking about as we think about both the workers' wages, as we think about long-term care, is the $880 billion that the federal government is considering cutting out of this budget area, because Minnesota cannot make that up. And we know it. I know that, Co-Chair Baker, that you have signed a letter asking and talking to our national federal Republican leaders. But what we know is that's the real threat to both the workers, but also to the folks that they care for. And so when we think about how we ensure that our seniors here in Minnesota have the dignified life, we think about long-term care, whether it's nursing homes and other facilities, we know that Medicaid makes up the biggest, broadest version of that. And so I just think we can't have this conversation about how we support nursing homes and nursing home workers without actually talking about the vast majority of it comes from federal funds. So if we're going to talk about it, I think, one, workers need to know their rights, but we also need to ensure that we are fighting and advocating for the resources that actually are funding our nursing homes, which are vastly long-term, which are vastly federal. And the last thing I'll say is the reason that they're cutting that $880 billion is for a $5 trillion tax cut for billionaires, trillionaires, millionaires. And so we need to provide for the folks who are making, our working class folks, and that is how we do it. So thank you, Representative Igbaje, for bringing this bill.
Representative Frazier, up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Igbaje, thank you for bringing the bill. You know, I think I heard this right from one of my colleagues across the aisle, that when we had the testify and the response to that was, sorry, they're so miserable. Why are they still there? There was a bill brought into this committee not too long ago that was specifically to protect workers and their ability to speak out when there were bad things happening in the workplace. My colleagues on the other side embraced that bill, said it was great, said we needed it. We need to give them a voice and empower them so they wouldn't feel like they'd be retaliated against. This is no different than this member, this individual testifying to say that there's terrible things happening, we can do better, here's a bill to address some of those things. So thank you for bringing the bill. And I guess if I had a question for you, can you specifically say, why do we need this?
Representative Igbaje.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Thank you, Representative Frazier. I mean, you know, basically at the end of the day, we just want to make sure that the rules and the laws that we're putting forward, that workers are fully knowledgeable about that. And this bill helps do that. This bill helps to ensure that they receive that training, whether they're in a union shop or a non-union shop, and make sure that they know how to actually effectively use those rules and laws and regulations that we're putting out to the benefit of workers.
Representative Frazier, any follow-up?
Yes, just briefly. Yeah. Representative Igbaje, thank you for that clarification and making that point. This is the Labor Committee, and if we've got individuals that provide labor and they're here to raise issues, we should listen intently, and we should take it to heart, and we should be, in many ways, we should be deferential to those workers that are there on the front line. And lastly, I'll say there was a question about whether or not this would support non-union folks, and it does. And the one thing I know as a labor attorney and a union member is that we always say a rising tide lifts all. And we're trying to lift all workers, not just workers that are part of a union. So thank you for bringing this.
Okay. Representative Zeleznikar, back to you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Igbaje. For 40 years, I've been working to support nursing home employees. I was a nursing assistant. I'm not sure if you've been a nursing assistant or worked on direct shifts for shift work in nursing homes, but I've worked every shift and every position throughout COVID. I guess My comment is, it took 2 years to get any funding. Under one party rule, it was no in the state of Minnesota. Until the 11th hour, there was $300 million found under a couch cushion for the nursing homes on the last day of session. And that was because I stood up and said, this is not right, for an entire two-year period, as did families and residents and employees across the state. Now, this year, the governor's budget caps the program that funds nursing homes, which is value-based reimbursement, at 2%. It's a cost-based program. So when they get their delayed payments of 18 months, members, and their cost just went up 6% or 8%, the governor's saying, no, we're not going to follow those rules anymore. We're going to give you 2%. The cost for the nursing home in my district is over $1 million for 4 years with the governor's proposal. So while this is a great intention, the bigger issue for Minnesota is the long-term sustainability of nursing homes. And that 2% cap on the VBR is going to create closures in Minnesota. There's no way they can sustain it. They're still recovering from COVID, for the point I made on my last testimony this morning, is that this $1 million in this bill should have happened 2 years ago to replace the fines, because they couldn't. We have the Department of Labor. We had infection control standards. They were doing everything they could under the pandemic, and they're recovering. And so there's ways to help the field. But the reality is, to the point the testifier made, at the turnover, nursing home administrators are mandated by the federal government. Under CMS, you have to have a nursing home administrator to run a facility. They have all the responsibility and not much authority. And the responsibilities include training, like they have to do on all the Department of Labor rules and the state of Minnesota rules and the federal CMS rules. And we get surveyed. They get surveyed, not me anymore, because I've been doing it since 2020. But the fact is, those systems are in place. So I acknowledge what you want to do for rules and laws. That's fine. The mechanism to do it, I think, needs to be thought through, because this issue of funding nursing homes is drastically being reduced under the governor's budget. Regardless of what's been said about the federal government, this is Minnesota made. We've created the system we have for the nursing homes. We fund them through this body, and it's been a hard no for decades. And so that's something that needs to be addressed. We had an $18.5 billion surplus, and we couldn't get $300 million till the 11th hour, or the $1 million restored for fines. It was no. And so I support funding the nursing homes. I have for 40 years, and the absolute system of how what we're talking about in the big picture, because there's over $600 million of cuts from Minnesota under the governor's proposal. And that is real for 300 nursing homes across the state. And the question that I'm getting from families and residents is, what are we doing about this? Because that is the long-term survival. When you have 70% of the funding coming from medical assistance, you know, formula, when people are living to this age. So I hope you'll consider that. I hope you will consider training by the agencies that, and the organizations that have trained healthcare workers in this field for decades and done it well. Thank you.
And Representative Bache, I'll let you respond to all these comments as part of your close. I just want to see any other member questions or comments, and I'm not seeing anybody. So Representative Bache, will let you close on your bill.
Sure. Thank you. Representative Zeleznikar, I mean, I agree with you. It is troubling sometimes to see the governor's proposal for a variety of areas where we would like to see additional funding. But the good thing is that at the end of the day, it is just a proposal. And so us, the 134 of us here in this body, will have the opportunity to figure out what levels best work across a variety of industries, a variety of sectors, to ensure that we're taking care of the people of Minnesota. So I agree with you on that. I would say, though, that, you know, we continue... You know, we did find that $330 million to give to the nursing homes last year, so I think that's helpful. And then this board is also one where, as we're continuing to fund nursing homes, that we're making sure that the funding is used in a way that not only supports the employers but also supports the employees. And so we want to make sure that there's that balance. You know, at the end of the day, particularly for a bill like this, we hear from workers all the time that they don't know what the laws that we've passed in the legislature are. They don't know what the protections are that they have at work. And so when that happens, employers, whether they mean well or they don't, sometimes can end up paying them less than they deserve. But if we use some of those funds, like we have in this bill here particularly, to invest in training at the front end, it'll make sure that the amounts of money that we're putting into the nursing homes goes to the workers that we all want to support. And I hope that we all want to support that. So at the end of the day, I do think that this training resource could be a powerful measure to prevent wage fraud. It also helps workers know their workers are the ones who know their rights, and they know the best way to prevent that type of waste from employers. And I hope that as the committee continues to discuss the larger budget bill, that this will be in consideration. So thank you for the time.
Representative Bajaj, thanks for your work. And with that, the chair lays over House File 339 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And now I'm going to ask Representative Berg to move House File 1272 to bring that before us, if you're willing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move 1272 to be before us.
Thank you so much. And again, members, the plan is to lay this bill over, although I'll note I think this is a pretty technical change. So I guess Chair Baker and others, if the spirit moves you to think that it is something to send on through, you can let the chair know and we can see. But Representative Bajaj, if you can please describe the bill, and then we'll move to the testifier.
Sure. So this bill, as House File 1272, is really a technical change, particularly to ensure that we're better refining the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board that we passed a couple years ago. So this seeks to clarify the definition of a nursing home based on how the Department of Labor is currently implementing the law. So in the law language for the board, the definition of a nursing home references Chapter 144A and Statutes 144.5 to 111.56. And the definition of a nursing home employer references Chapter 256R that outlines Medicaid reimbursement. So it's a little technical, but basically the idea is we want to make the list of nursing homes that are covered actually narrower than what the law sort of looks like right now. And that's because not all nursing homes and boarding nursing homes are reimbursed under Medicaid. And so the clarification to the law in this bill would narrow that list of eligible nursing homes and better match the list of nursing home employers that we're using. And so this would make it clear that places like veterans homes, private pay-only facilities, facilities on tribal land, and Medicare-only rehabilitation nursing homes are not under the purview of the Workforce Standards Board. So that's how the law has been interpreted now for the past 2 years, and then this language just brings it in line with the practical reality. The board did see this language. They don't actually have the ability to make recommendation on legislation, but they all agree that at least this language was not controversial. And so I do have a representative here from the Department of Labor for any further questions on the technical aspect of it.
Yeah. Are you going to be providing any testimony? Please identify yourself, Mr. Lieutenant, and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Josiah Moore. I'm the Legislative Director at the Department of Labor and Industry. I did prepare some testimony. Representative Agbaje's description of the technical portions of the bill was very thorough and accurate, so I'll just say that the department supports this technical change, and we'll be here for any questions. Thank you.
And maybe you can just clarify for me, Mr. Moore, the bill would narrow the scope of facilities to which the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board applies, and right now the board is interpreting the law in the way. This would simply cause the law to sort of catch up to that and confirm that veterans home, private pay facilities, facilities on tribal lands, et cetera, are in fact excluded from the scope of the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I see a couple of yeses. Okay. And anybody else in the audience who wish to testify on the bill, first of all? Not seeing anybody. Okay. And then member questions or discussion at all? And I might ask, as I say, the plan had been to lay this over, and I guess we'll still confirm that, although, as I say, if Chair Baker remembers it all, if anybody sort of sees this and says this looks like something where it narrows the scope of the board, I'm interested in moving that on, but we can have discussions separately as well. So any discussion from any members? I'm not seeing anything. Okay. All right. Well, we will move on then. Representative Agbaje, you had a chance to describe your bill. There wasn't any further comment. Anything else you want to say to close things up? No? Okay. I mean, it does. So this is helpful because it does narrow the scope of things. So I guess we'll continue to have the discussion. So members, with that, that was fairly short. The chair lays over House File 1272 for a possible further discussion. Representative Agbaje, thank you. You've got a couple more bills.
Do you want me to stay for that?
I think so. Yep, I think that's what's coming up next on the agenda, so might as well stay right on up there.
Keep on moving.
Okay. So we've got House File 2121, and I guess Representative Berg, if you don't mind, we'll just keep on going with you. If you don't mind doing that, moving House File 2121 to be before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2121 to be before the committee.
Thank you so much. Representative Agbaje, if you can please describe the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I appreciate your indulgence for the multiple bills I have today. So this next set of bills will be for the West Broadway Coalition, which is a business organization in North Minneapolis. This particular bill, House File 2121, is for a program that would support the ambassador program that the West Broadway Coalition has been facilitating since 2015. The program focuses on employing people to help maintain safe and clean streets. That then improves the overall safety of the community. And so West Broadway Coalition wants to ensure that it's not only the businesses along the corridor that thrive, but that the people also feel the impact of its work, and they feel safe there, and they can thrive as well. And so with that, I have a couple of testifiers with me from the West Broadway Coalition who can talk more about the program.
Okay. Whoever is going to be going first, please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, how you doing? My name is Chris Del Porter. Welcome. I'm the executive director of West Broadway Business and Area Coalition. I also live in the neighborhood as well. So North Minneapolis is at a very unique crossroads where its amenities have not caught up with the most recent census data. Our community has crossed over into a middle-class community that still has yet to have the goods and services catch up to their demands. Due to this fact, the Special Service District on West Broadway Avenue receives only $200,000 in assessments annually to maintain 27 blocks of a commercial corridor for the entire year. Because of this, WBC has been complementing that, and by investing about $70,000 every single year to maintain the avenue. And last year, we contributed to close to $100,000 to not only provide ambassadors to clean up the avenue, but also to help the city by matching their $25,000 to install planters along the avenue, since they did not have enough to pay for them. Our ambassadors not only maintain a clean avenue and maintain the greenery, yet they also provide an extra layer of security by wearing identifiable uniforms, maintaining a relationship with the youth walking to and from school, and keeping an eye on the avenue for the business owners, especially in a time where our city has had a severe shortage of law enforcement. This program also provides second chance job opportunities by creating living wage jobs, giving workers a sense of pride in their community. And then also by increasing the business's ability to attract and sustain new customers, and ultimately increasing their capacity to hire more people in our community. So I appreciate you giving us the time to talk about this, and I will pass it on to my colleague, Donna.
Okay, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, maybe get a little bit closer.
On the microphone.
There we go. There we. Thanks, Representative Ibaje. Yeah, please.
Hi, I'm Donna Sanders. I'm the business specialist for the West Broadway Business and Area Coalition. I've been at WBC for 2.5 years. My job as business specialist is to help the businesses, existing businesses on West Broadway and the local BIPOC developers. I do that in the form of helping them find financing to build on empty parcels, helping them with remodeling, and also as a team we provide technical assistance either in the form of contractors or ourselves to the businesses. West Broadway has already made great strides in improving the corridor, strengthening the existing businesses, providing TA in the form of legal, accounting, marketing, helping with navigating city regulations, and helping again with financing and loans. Furthermore, we have highly successful festivals and events. Our specialty is our Open Streets event in the fall. That's 12,000 participants with 364 small businesses. This is all in vain if the public believes that it's not safe to come down to West Broadway. The media is only focused on drugs and crime on West Broadway. There's a steady drumbeat of negativity. We need to change the perception of West Broadway and the North Side. We need to show the media, we need to show the public that West Broadway is a loving, caring, tight-knit community. And by cleaning up litter, which is a part of the program, this ambassador program, by cleaning up litter, by removing graffiti right away, by putting up a planter, a piece of art, shows the community that someone cares, shows the public that someone cares, and that this is a strong community. We need your support. Again, I ask you to support the HF 2121. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I assume that's it for testifiers in advance. Anybody from the audience wish to testify? Not seeing any. Member questions, discussion? Chair Baker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your work on this. I think, again, having been in that area briefly, again, I work a lot with the SUD community, the substance use disorder folks, and we're trying to do everything we can to help those areas. I'm glad that the ambassador program is kind of out there working on this. Maybe my just question is just logistically, why come to the state of Minnesota versus maybe you're reaching out to the city of Minneapolis for this? Maybe that's been done, and just want to kind of get that background.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, please, yeah. Ms. Sanders, I think it was?
Ms. Porter.
Ms. Porter, I'm sorry. Yeah, Ms. Porter.
I'd like to answer that, actually. So the special service district was something that was appropriated by the state legislature, and it has served the corridor as well, the commercial corridors in the city of Minneapolis very well. However, the issue with it is it's all tied to assessments, and the unfortunate thing is our neighborhood has been overlooked by our city for many decades. I've been living there my entire life, and because of it, you've got lots that are owned by the city, owned by the county, and lots that have not been, people have been not held accountable to maintaining their buildings, and so the assessments are very low. And like I said, we're only, this year was the highest that they're going to be able to collect, and that's $200,000 to maintain an entire 27 block corridor for an entire year. It's just not enough. And when you compare it to other corridors, we're like literally a drop in the bucket compared to what we're able to raise to maintain the avenue. And because of it, we as the business association, not like any other business association in the city of Minneapolis, are complementing those funds every single year. And it's especially in the time that we're in right now, we're just not seeing our ability to be able to raise those dollars in the next couple of years to be able to keep that maintenance up until something has changed with special service districts.
Chair Baker?
Thank you. That's all.
Okay. Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Representative Baje, for bringing this forward. I have been in Broadway for the last couple of days, and it's getting much better because of the work you guys are doing, and I want to appreciate it for engaging the community and not only picking up the trash, but also, you know, like talking to the youth, talking to the community, and that is a hell of a great work you guys are doing in the Broadway. Getting better from COVID up to now. There's a lot of businesses and a lot of developments are interested in moving into Broadway area because of the work that you guys are doing. And I want to thank you for continuing doing this great job. I would love for you to guys expand it and come to University Avenue so we can have that. Because we do have a challenge in my district when it comes to crimes, and it's getting and it's out of control, but the programs like in Broadway Coalition Ambassador, it's been very helpful, and I hope you guys can consider expanding to all the way to University Avenue.
Thank you.
Okay, a call to come to St. Paul. any other member questions or discussion at all on the bill? I'll just note, Representative Baje and I have had conversation about this, and certainly members in the committee as well, that there's been some discussion about a move towards competitive grants as opposed to direct appropriations, and so one thing I'd encourage you to do is just to be considering, if that were to be the case, sort of what this program, because it certainly seems like a terrific, we certainly want to be supporting the West Broadway area. There's a small business assistance partnership grant program with Indeed that may be applicable. Yeah, just to sort of note that. We may want to look at that program and others and see, are there criteria, are there things in statute otherwise to make sure that program and others are working as well as they possibly could. But just sort of if that's a direction that Chair Baker and I and the committee want to go, just we want to make sure that we'd be wouldn't at all disadvantage important uses of funds like this one. So just to kind of encourage you to be considering that. So just seeing if there's anything else anybody wants to say. No, so I'm going to go back to Representative Baje for any closing remarks on this bill.
No, thank you very much for the time, and look forward to talking to you about the next project from the West Broadway.
Indeed. Okay, good. I suspect your testifiers can probably just stay right where they are.
Okay.
So with that, the chair lays over House File 2121 for possible inclusion in a future budget bill. And then Representative Berg, if you're willing to move House File 2122 to bring that before us.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House File 2122 before the committee.
Thank you so much. And Representative Bajaj, please tell us, I think, the same area, but a slightly different purpose. So please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Same area, but this time this funding request would support the establishment of a youth internship program in North Minneapolis. So this type of program is useful in ensuring that we have a strong workforce coming from this community. This program would allow interns to work with local businesses, build up their soft skills, and learn how to use best use technology for marketing and advertising. The program is likely to partner with local schools, medical centers like North Memorial, and job training centers like eMERGE, Career, and Technology Center. So I will turn it over again to Ms. Porter and her colleague in order to talk more about the program and what they've been able to do so far.
Okay, Ms. Porter, yes, you introduced yourself earlier, but please continue.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. All right, so I am the executive director of WBC, but I've also served as an educator and gymnastics coach for the public schools and parks for over 17 years. This wasn't always my story. I actually came from a family that lived in extreme poverty and outside of my control had to leave home at 14 years old. I'm convinced that what prepared me for this abrupt push into adulthood was the opportunities I had when I was younger than that. When I was 10 years old, I was given the opportunity to help elders in my neighborhood with their community gardens at an assisted living facility. When I was 12, I was given a job at a local church to clean and organize their offices and sanctuary. And when I was 13, I worked as a candy striper at Abbott Northwestern Hospital. These jobs changed my life and gave me a chance to develop my social skills and soft skills, such as teamwork, communication, problem solving, and time management. There are several studies that illustrate that illustrate the economic and social benefits of supporting youth jobs programs. The National Bureau of Economic Research found that participation in summer jobs programs resulted in a 20% decrease in violent crimes, and young adults who engage in work experience during their teenage years have been found to earn about 10% more than those who did not. Youth need entry-level jobs, professional networking opportunities, and other activities outside of their school besides sports and theater. In addition to our youth benefiting, our small businesses will benefit from this program by providing access to labor, fresh perspectives from the youth, a workforce pathway, increased visibility, and an enhanced job readiness in their community. I'm asking you guys to support this House File 2122 because we believe that this program will help our businesses improve the overall job readiness of our younger generation, which can lead to a more skilled workforce available for employment in the future, benefiting both the businesses and our youth. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Ms. Sanders, you're going to be speaking as well.
Hi, my name is Donna Sanders. And I would like to cite two examples of how this youth intern program currently works on West Broadway. West Broadway has two amazing nonprofit businesses that provide entry-level jobs available to Northside youth on the corridor. Cookie Cart and Appetite for Change are food-related businesses that provide education and training and internships. I want to talk about two women who are now in their 40s that had the opportunity to work at these organizations. One woman worked at Cookie Cart. That was her first job. She was a Northside young black woman who lived on the north side. She worked at Cookie Cart, and from that point on, she got more training through the city and through the state. She now owns a building on West Broadway. She took an empty building, and she redeveloped it. And she put 11 small businesses into that building. So Cookie Cart created 12 businesses by this one person who lived in the neighborhood and who had the opportunity to work at this organization. Another woman worked at Appetite for Change. It taught her it educated her on food and how to cook food and and the business skills that she learned there taught her catering. And then from the catering, she was part of a partnership that started a restaurant on the north side called Heal, Minneapolis, that provided jobs to neighborhood residents. Both these women are in their 40s now. These two organizations have been around for decades. So just two nonprofits created how many jobs, how many businesses, created something positive. So I really ask you to support the HF 2122. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Anybody from the audience wishes to testify? I had the chance to tour Cookie Cart years ago, and just a terrific place, kind of making me a little hungry even hearing it. So, okay, we will close testimony then. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you, Representative Agbaje, for this bill. This, I think, Chair Pinto, is a really interesting conversation that we should probably have with education altogether. Yeah. I mean, as we have looked at the shifts in education, as we start thinking about what people are looking for, we're already seeing in other states them looking at having more apprenticeship internships actually required in their high school and how that's looking. And so these are the type of conversations that we should be having. I still have an active teaching license, and so I'm still teaching. I've been a teacher for over 20 years, and so anyone who's willing to invest in schools, I say yes. But I just think that this intersectionality between workforce and education is really important, and we need to have that conversation. And just a point of personal privilege, Mr. Chair, I will say that I have been on a rampage trying to change that soft skills should be changed to durable skills, because these skills are things that actually overlap over time, continue over time, but they're so difficult to learn. And once you do learn them, you're able to continue and use them for as much as you can for the rest of your life. And so I have worked with my students for years. How do we build up these durable skills? How do we get them so that they can go into any job opportunity and be able to show that this is something that they're ready for and that they can bring value to that employer? And so not really a question, but something to really think about as we continue on, maybe not this term because we have, or this current session because we have things to do, but something that really maybe we should explore in 26 on how we want to think about how education and business and job-related fields intersect. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Yeah, I'm not sure if there's anything any of the testifiers or Representative Bajaj want to say in response to any of that, but certainly powerful skills might be another phrase for it, too. So seeing nodding. Are there other member questions or statements? Yes, Chair Baker. Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much. Again, this is a very interesting bill. I think very reasonable. I'm not sure if I should ask this to Ms. Porter or the author, but has this program been in place for a number of years, a few years? And if so, how many youth have we been able to support to date?
Representative Bajaj. Oh, no, Ms. Porter.
Thank you, Representative Baker. So this is a brand new program, but not my first time. I've actually worked with the Step Up program for many years and have actually hosted up to 22 youth every single year when I was leading the neighborhood associations in North Minneapolis as well. So this would not be my first rodeo. We are working with consulting with the Step Up program. The only issue with the Step Up is that it's only in the summertime. And a lot of our youth, they need jobs year round. And unfortunately, like Donna said, there's two programs that are offering entry-level jobs for youth in North Minneapolis. That's it. And when you think about all the other corridors, they've got bowling alleys, movie theaters, cafes, clothing stores, all kinds of places for our youth to work, and we just don't have that. And so we're trying to create that with our 32 business members, and we also have North Memorial that's also partnering with us as well, so that if kids are interested in getting into the medical field, that they can have that experience as well.
Chair Baker, follow-up?
Just a final follow-up, yeah. Mr. Chair. Thank you. And give me a range of the youth ages that you're hoping to focus on.
Yep, so we're working with the high school interns, so they would be 10th grade and above.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, okay. And not seeing other things. Oh, maybe we're a little ahead of schedule, so maybe I'll just note a couple things. So one is that to Representative Mueller's point, I've been thinking about how our committee kind of fits in. You know, there's the you've got the early childhood space that I've spent a lot of time in, kind of in children and families. You've got K-12. There's higher ed. Our committee fits in. Then kind of it seems to me it's that workforce and those skills coming out of, right? It's not higher ed. Sort of exactly how do we fit in the areas that we oversee and where can we play the biggest role? And I agree, Representative Mueller, to a certain extent, that's a longer term conversation. And to a certain extent, this is our chance to set a 2-year budget in the next couple of weeks not to panic anybody. And so to the extent that we can bring in some of that thinking as quickly as possible, I think that makes a ton of sense. So glad to talk to you further and Chair Baker as well, because this is a unique chance we have. And speaking of which, members, on Thursday we'll be hearing, it's kind of Youth Day, we'll be hearing, I think entirely the agenda consists of grant proposals relating to youth development and workforce development. We're hearing this bill now because Representative Bajaj was here and the testifiers, but just to sort of fit all that into place. And then so connecting that for this bill to what I said in the prior bill as well, then we'll just want to think about if in fact, I know there are a number of competitive programs for youth development. We want to make sure that they're well funded, and if this is something that we wanted to move in that direction, that you'd be in good position to be eligible for that with this proposal. So I'll talk to further with Representative Bajaj and the testifiers. We just kind of want to highlight that for all of us. So looking to see if anything else from members, not seeing anything. So Representative Bajaj, last words to you.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you to the chair. Thank you to the committee for your time. I think I took up about an hour. but I really appreciate the conversations. I really hope that as we continue to build up our workforce, I think as Representative Mueller was saying, this is really great to really coordinate that and collaborate with our schools, making sure our kids have the best chance of success as possible, no matter where they are in the state. So thank you all for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you for being with us this morning. You've been bringing a range of bills to us, Representative Bajaj. It's been glad to have you here. So with that, the chair lays over House File 2122 for possible inclusion in a future budget bill. And so, Representative Berg, you are up. And as you make your way up, Representative Berg moves House File 1216 to bring that before the committee. So we've got that motion being made on your behalf. And then once you settle in, yeah, I have testifiers come on up. And then please, when you are ready, you can begin presenting your bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to present House File 1216 to support an excellent apprenticeship readiness program called Building Strong Communities. I carry this bill every year. It is my honor. And I'd like to also thank my co-author, Representative Zalesnikar, for her partnership. As this committee knows, Minnesota's union apprenticeship programs are the gold standard for structured earn-while-you-learn training, with an outstanding track record of getting people into careers in the trades. Collectively, the trades and their employers spend $40 million on these programs without public funding. Building Strong Communities is a program created to help feed people into that pipeline who may not know about it or may not be prepared to enter it. Like many other industries in construction, it's an advantage to have a family member in the trades. If your dad or uncle is in the trades, for instance, you're much more likely to have experience using hand tools, climbing the ladder, reading a tape measure, and understanding that there's a path to a great career. The goal of Building Strong Communities is to help people who don't have that background get that experience, understand the basics of the industry, and figure out how to get into apprenticeship programs. Building Strong Communities serves people from all backgrounds, but is focused on those people who don't have a history in the construction industry in their families. We know that this is often true for people of color and women, so that is one focus of the program. Building Strong Communities also specifically reaches out to military veterans to help them find a home in the trades. In short, Mr. Chair, this program puts people from a disadvantaged background on a path to a career, a great career that offers family-sustaining wages with health care, benefits, and a secure retirement. With that, I'm more excited for you all to hear from the testifiers we have today.
Okay, thank you. And so if you can please identify yourself, first testifier, then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Rick Martigan. I am a Navy veteran, retired Local 1 Minnesota, North Dakota tile layer, and now honored to serve as Building Strong Communities Executive Director. I'm here to share the impact and success of Building Strong Communities, a 12-week statewide apprenticeship readiness program designed to introduce and prepare Minnesotans for a career in the building and construction trades. BSC is just not a workforce program, it's a pathway to lifelong careers in the skilled trades. With training conducted online and hands-on in the Twin Cities, Rochester, Mankato, Duluth Iron Range areas, and greater Minnesota, BSC provides Minnesotans with a direct connection to registered apprenticeship programs, ensuring that participants enter the industry prepared and confident. We achieve this by working hand-in-hand with construction industry professionals, registered apprenticeship programs, post-secondary institutions, community organizations, project owners, and municipalities. Our participants receive OSHA 10 safety training, foundational construction curriculum, including math curriculum, and mentorship through our partner with Twin Cities Rise. Our partners, North Hennepin Community College, delivers 8 weeks of virtual classroom training, while the trades provide up to 6 weeks of hands-on training, giving participants both technical skills and the confidence needed to make an informed decision about a career choice and be successful. Additionally, each participant is assigned a program advocate at the beginning of the program and 1 year post-placement to ensure that their path in this industry is successful. Graduates earn four college credits and are prepared to enter the workforce as the construction season begins. The training is free to each of the individuals. BSC's success is reflected in our numbers. Enrollment has nearly tripled from 43 participants in 2022 to 127 in 2025. Completion rates are strong with a program best ever last year of 105 graduates. Career job placement is significant with a three-year total of 134 people. This year, 127 participants enrolled are in their sixth week of training. BSC also extends its impact beyond adults through our youth component and youth career exploration. In partnership with Construct Tomorrow, founded in 2013 to bring awareness to high school students about the remarkable post-secondary career options in the building construction trades industry. Since its launch in 2013, Construct Tomorrow has connected with over 75,000 high school students from more than 500 schools across Minnesota with a hands-on trade experience and one-on-one mentorship. This past year alone, over on my sheet it says 5,200, but with last year's event in the Duluth area, over 6,000 students participated in Construct Tomorrow in 10 Construct Tomorrow events each year and this year. Many walking away with a newfound awareness that a construction apprenticeship is an accessible, viable, and rewarding post-secondary option. As we continue to introduce and expand opportunities in Minnesota's construction industry, the support for this program is vital in ensuring that BSC continues to provide high-quality, hands-on training that strengthens our workforce and builds the next generation of skilled trades professionals who contribute daily to their communities. Thank you for your time and support. And today I brought with three additional testifiers, registered apprentices, who will provide some testimony.
Okay, Mr. please.
Elon Newman, he is a heat and frost insulator, second year, and a 10-year Army reservist. Dorlisa Squires, operating engineer's first year apprentice. And Natalie Pilrine, also an operating engineer, first year apprentice.
Okay, let's begin with Mr. Newman. If you can please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, my name is Keelan Newman. It's nice to meet you, members of the chair and committee. Appreciate you guys having me here today. I'm simply just taking time out of my day to support Rick and his program. A little about me is I have been in the U.S. Army Reserves for over 10 years now, serving as a psychological operations specialist, and I am also a combat production specialist for the Army. I found the opportunity kind of seeking it out. I was living in the Rochester part of the state. I was currently going through a divorce at the time that landed me, unfortunately, kind of isolated and alone. My family had moved all out of the state. I was seeking to kind of get out of that area and to get kind of more centralized back into the Twin Cities area so I had more opportunity. If you've been down to the Rochester area, wages are a lot lower, and unless you're working in the medical industry, you're just not really seeing too many opportunities. During that too, you know, in that area, you know, the other opportunities are going to be construction. Well, if you've had the opportunity to look on Indeed or had the opportunity to go through a lot of these different things, there's just not opportunity for work, more or less connections. You reach out to a lot of these contractors, a lot of these unions, and they're going to be, who's your dad? There's a lot of nepotism. There's a lot of those things. So personally for me, I'm the son of journeyman. I'm a third generation insulator. My dad was an insulator. My grandpa was an insulator. And I knew that for me, the only opportunity was to get back to the cities. And I said, okay, well, you know, maybe this is my opportunity to reach out to them. But that wasn't the case. A lot of these unions are backed up. There are, you know, people sitting and waiting on the bench, young kids coming out of high school, people who've been waiting a couple of years permitting. So for me, it felt like there was no opportunity. And in that kind of conversation I had with some of the unions, I was referred to Building Strong Communities. They said, hey, you know, little about me, what are you? I said, I'm a veteran. I don't necessarily pride myself on focus on what the color of my skin is, just because I've been kind of a person who's never taken any handouts in life. I don't really care to, and I don't care to use this as a opportunity to get ahead of anyone in this world. But they did say, hey, you are a veteran, you are a person, you are very committed, you should consider looking into this program. And I said, all right, I will. And they were also referring me to a couple other different apprenticeship programs at the time. But Rick's program was the first to get back to me, and it was very prompt. For me, that showed there was a level of commitment that the other programs weren't just willing to give. Rick was there to guide me. He gave me an opportunity. He quickly had an interview with me, you know, seeing where my mind space, my head space. He didn't just simply, oh, you're in the program, you know, just because your merit or your accreditation. It was, hey, who are you as an individual, and is this going to be the right fit for you? With that opportunity, you know, I really wanted to seek this out. So I got in, I took his classes. He made it very accessible for me. You know, at the time I was homeless, you know, because everybody's different, you know, not everyone gets there, you know, homeless for whatever reason it may be. Mine just happened to be because of my relationship at the time, and I needed income. And so his class allowed me to do it on my phone, on my iPad. At the time I would sleep up at my unit. Unfortunately, I would sleep in a cage at my Army unit, take showers at my unit. I would attend classes in my truck or a local library, wherever I needed to just get the opportunity to make sure I attended his class, because there was a level of discipline requirement that was required of him. He said, hey, I need you to be here. You cannot miss this. These unions, you know, and I knew that growing up with my father, that they require a lot of discipline and time out of your day. You know, these aren't just programs that are simply guide you along. In that time, you know, his class provided me a level of reference that I hadn't known. I've never been trained for in my life. You know, I've been taking plenty of classes. I've gone to college. You know, I can be pretentious of all the things I've done in the military and all the places I've been around the world. But his class also provided a lesson on emotional EQ. You know, how do we present ourselves when we're in a workplace, you know, an environment like construction? You know, you are going to get a plethora of different personalities. This isn't an easy field. And how are you going to respond to your employer or other employers who may not have the same political beliefs as you, or may not necessarily see, you know, who have had the opportunity of nepotism, whose dad has worked, his dad has worked and whatnot. So that gave me a robust feeling and a level of like putting me ahead and being ready to get back into this industry.
I might ask you if you could just wrap up maybe in a minute or so, if you can. Thank you so much.
You know, with that, like I said, it really did do a lot to get me into the position. He gave me the OSHA training and everything I needed to get done. And by the time, you know, I came rolling around, I was light years ready and ahead and being in the industry. Overall, I think that his program can do a lot for minorities, youth, people, anyone, honestly anyone, to get them ready in an industry that honestly lacks workers right now. There's multiple turnarounds. There's multiple places that we just don't have enough people. And so take away from funding like this or helping would, yeah, definitely help. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your testimony, and thank you for your service to our country. Appreciate it. Delissa Squires, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Dorlisa Squires. I am a past graduate of BSC, Business Strong Communities, and now I am a proud union 49er. I'm all nervous, so sorry.
Yeah, no, you're all good. All good.
Before I started the program, I was in the medical field for 20 years, anywhere from a nursing assistant to a TMA, that's a trained medical assistant, and working in hospice. I made medical devices for people with diabetes. After so long, I didn't really get any good benefits or see a long future for that. And plus, it's on the mental, it's kind of hard. I was divorced and ended up homeless. And so that took a year of a toll on me. So I had to figure out my life from then. Somebody told me about being in construction. I went online and looked up a couple of programs, and Building Strong Communities was the first one to reach out to me and give me some insight on what they do, how long their program was, and the cost was free. So that helped a lot. Going through the program, they had different field trips, different college people reaching out to you, your advocate. So they had different avenues to help with each individual to make it through this program. And I'm lucky that I did make it through the program. Without the program, I wouldn't be a 49er right now. And so now I have a career, and now I have a, you know, placement. I have an apartment, a car. And so I'm really grateful for, you know, just going through the program.
Good. Thank you so much. And then our final testifier, please identify yourself. Proceed.
Hi, thank you. My name is Natalie Pilrain. I'm a 2024 Building Strong Communities graduate and a first-year apprentice with the Local 49. A little backstory about me. I'm a single mom, and I had my son when I was 17 years old. For me, that meant dropping out of high school to be with my son. I ended up going back to school in the fall of 2023, and that's when I started thinking about what I wanted to do for a career, and my biggest focus was finding a career that I would allow me to support my son and I. Mm-hmm. Through resources at school, I was introduced to a member of the Local 49. I expressed my interest in wanting to become an operator. I knew little about construction, but I wanted to give it a try, and I heard about the benefits and the pay, and I was interested. I was recommended the Building Strong Communities program as a good way to get my foot in the door and educate myself on the career field. I was actually personally introduced to Rick, and I wasn't done with high school at the time. I didn't have my diploma, and that was one of the program requirements. But Rick said that if I could get my diploma by the time the cohort started for the year, that I would be able to participate in the program. And I completed that. I went through the program, the online portion, and moved on to the four-week training at the Local 49 Training Center. And now at the time, I didn't have extra money lying around for work boots or hotel expenses for going up to the training center, but Building Strong Communities covered those costs for me. And not only did they help me get through financially, but I did not know what I was getting into going into this career field. And through the program, I gained some incredible knowledge. I met some amazing people and got some amazing support to get into this career. I then got placed with a union contractor, and I am about to go into my second year of apprenticeship here. The opportunities didn't end when I graduated the Building Strong Communities program. I've kept in touch with Rick. He's kept in touch with me. He's always answered any questions I've had. He's showed me incredible support, as have many people from the Building Strong Communities program. And I am so grateful to Rick and everyone from the BSC program for helping me get to this place today.
Thank you for sharing your testimony. Anybody else in the room wish to testify on the bill? Not seeing any, we'll close testimony, and thank you again to the testifiers. And then member questions, discussion, anybody has about the bill. Representative Zelisnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for this bill. We share a passion for the trades and for apprenticeship programs for students. I was fortunate enough to have health occupations in high school, and programs like this
are ones that are easy to support. And the wonderful thing about this program is the $100,000 a year that goes to the Construct Tomorrow, the programs that are listed in here that show all the areas. The area I live in northeastern Minnesota is one of them, and they were there last week at the DECT, you know, doing this and exposing students from the entire region to all the trade opportunities. And in order to build strong communities for our infrastructure, our commercial tax base, and then our residential, we need people in the trades. And so what I appreciated about this program is the ability to expose people, and the unions have shared that with me too, that there's just a, traditionally, you know what you know. So if you grew up with teachers, you might be a teacher. If you grow up in healthcare, you might be in healthcare. If you grow up on a farm, you might be a farmer. But you might not know the other opportunities that exist for you. And that's what this program's about. You know, this year, the participants are 30% women and 70% men. And of that, it's of every race, you know, it's white people, it's BIPOC people, there's two veterans in this year. So it's wonderful to see the opportunities and the success. This program has a success story and is serving the entire state, which is something I like to see, where Greater Minnesota served the suburbs and metro. And that's when we'll have success to getting people exposed. And so I just want to say, you know, thank you. Thank you to our testifiers that came. I'm glad you're thriving. Thank you to the executive director that has created relationships throughout the state to support the trades for building strong communities, literally statewide, and making sure that we have people trained as people are retiring, and we know that. So I'm excited to see, and I like the fact that it's virtual and hands-on training and gives them a chance to see so many things that people just want to understand and see it. And we're hearing so many things in this committee on initiatives like this, and I think it's a job well done, and I'm happy to see graduates and a growing program and successful employment, and that's what it's all about in workforce and development. So thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing this bill, Representative Berg. You know, I appreciate broadly getting a lot of folks across the state into this, and appreciate the statewide approach and our continued work that I know will work on this session in that regard. I just had a question actually for Natalie. So could you tell us a little bit about how much you're making and your job today and exactly what it is that you like about your job?
Ms. Pilray.
Yes, thank you. So I believe the pay goes up every year. Journeyman scale right now is, someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's around $41 an hour. I certainly made a decent amount of money last year, and that's money I've never seen in my life. So that's incredibly life-changing for me, being able to provide for myself and my son. And I'm sorry, what was your other question?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what is it that you like about your job?
Okay, yes.
Ms. Pilray.
One of the biggest things, I love working outside. I love moving around, working outside, working in the elements. I never really saw myself working like an office job. I really had no idea what I wanted to do, but the idea of working outside and being able to do that always intrigued me. I guess it's hard to describe. I love the work that we do. I love working construction. I love operating equipment. It's fun for me. I learned every day that I worked last year. And it didn't feel like work for me. So,
okay, Representative Schultz, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Natalie. It's exciting, and if you guys weren't watching, you should have seen the smile on her face as she talked about how much money she's making and what it means for her and her family. And again, this is just about making sure that more people across our state have access to this, and certainly I find a lot of commonality in the mission of building strong communities. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. Murdigan. I think you're the right person to send it to. I know there are there are other programs as well that work with some of the populations that are referenced in the bill. I guess I'm thinking, I think we heard helmets to hard hats, Chair Baker. I'm not sure if we did in the committee so far. I kind of feel like we did. But anyway, maybe not. But that program, I think there's a grant program, Women in Non-Traditional Occupations, and other, just sort of how does Building Strong Communities differ or overlap or not with sort of other programs that are out there that are bringing folks from these different groups into construction trades?
Well, sure. Thank you for your question, Mr. Chair. Now, I'll bring it back just with a little bit of history of the work that I've done over the past, since 1988. I've been out in the field, I've been a field superintendent, and from that I became an instructor in 1998 and then a training director for Local 1 bricklayers and allied craft workers. And in that point, at that time, they also have done a pre-job training. It was 12 weeks at that time. Great program. They still run it today. And then after I left that position, I became the state program administrator for Apprenticeship Minnesota. And you got to see other initiatives that provide workforce development and training for people going to all different sorts of industries. And over the past two decades, I think what Building Strong Communities does is it takes all of those elements that have been learned, all those lessons learned, the successes, the things that weren't, the challenges, and has designed a program with all of the best practices of all those programs and put them into one. And so what we really take pride in is our retention of the people that come through the program, and that we maintain those relationships with each of the individuals as they journey through their career as registered apprentices. And we that continuous contact with them and support for their journey from individuals like myself who have experience in the industry just helps them, assists them, gives them an additional tool to resource to look back on and ask for assistance or support or just encouragement.
Okay. I may need to understand that better at another time. I won't belabor it now, but I maybe will ask you and Representative Berg to follow up, just sort of understanding how this program fits in the ecosystem of other programs, especially given the idea that, you know, we're potentially, rather than choosing individual organizations, we're trying to really solve an issue of getting folks in these communities into the construction trades, lots of different ways to do that. And so just understanding how this program fits in with others, we can continue the conversation. Anything else from members at all? I am not seeing any hands, so Representative Berg, we'll give you the chance to have final comments on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think just, you know, a short response to your question.
Yeah.
We do have other programs that are targeting, I guess, some of the same people as this program, veterans, women, et cetera. And I think that's okay, because I think we're wrapping our arms around a group of people that have been traditionally left out, and coming at it from various different ways is just a great thing, because we're providing opportunity for success. What I heard today from the testifiers is they came here, they shared some very difficult parts of their own stories, and the fact that those could have been barriers for them to find success, but instead they weren't, because they found this program, they had personal follow-up and accountability and support, and now, you know, Natalie is earning a living wage, supporting her son, getting health care, building a pension at what appears to be a very young age to me. And I think that's exciting. I think it speaks to why this program works and why it's important that we fund this. So I just want to thank the testifiers who came here and spoke to a room of strangers about some very difficult times in their life, and then showed us how it can be turned around. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well said, Representative Berg. Thank you so much to the testifiers. Thank you to you, Representative Berg. And with that, the chair lays over House File 1216 for possible inclusion in a future budget bill. And Representative Schultz, you make your way on up. Representative Schultz moves House File 1003 to bring that before the committee. And once you get settled in, Representative Schultz, you can present your bill.
Thank you.
Representative Schultz, we're ready when you are. Dive on in to present your bill.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just glad to have House File 1003 in front of us today, which is the Operating Engineers Career Pathways Program, which started in 2020 and had immediate success. This bill provides and appropriates $500,000 from the state's workforce development account to fund the school districts who have students that participate in this pathways program. So I'm going to immediately turn it over to our testifiers. Jenny Winkler is going to lead the way with Local 49, and then we're going to go on from there. So thank you, Jenny, and welcome to the testifiers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. And, yeah, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jenny Winkler. I'm the Director of Workforce and Community Development for Operating Engineers Local 49.
Okay, and, yep, so we'll have second testifier, I guess, and then we'll move back to you, or you can either way. If you got any, please introduce yourself then. Yeah.
Hello, Chair. Mary Moore. I'm Superintendent Houston Public Schools.
Welcome to you, yeah. And back to Jenny Winkler, I guess. Okay. Yeah, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. We are here today to talk to you about the Operating Engineers High School Pathway Program. Demand for skilled operators is very high. From clean energy to roads, bridges, our communities depend on the work that heavy equipment operators do. This is a promising career path offering family sustaining wages, top-tier benefits, no college debt, and jobs that can't be outsourced, frankly. A flexible glance at the pathway. We partnered with Minnesota Virtual Academy to offer online enrollment where students can stay in their regular brick-and-mortar schools and participate from that online. Sorry about that. We supplement the online classes with hands-on training events in the industry. There's potential for high school credit, college credit, as well as apprenticeship credit, and this is free to high school students provided that the students pass the class. A brief history of the program. The program launched in 2020, and again, we partnered with Minnesota Virtual Academy so that we are able to offer geographic breadth to the program. We wanted to make sure that any and all students through the great state of Minnesota, grades 9 through 12, had access to the courses. We have had students enrolled from over 150 school districts in the state of Minnesota. We do realize that while some people learn very well in a virtual setting, it's not for everybody. So we also continue to build out the program and launched an in-person program in partnership with Wright Tech in Buffalo, Minnesota, that serves 8 school districts in the West Metro area. We also are wrapping up, we're in the final stages of a partnership and intend to launch in 2025-2026 in partnership with St. Paul Public Schools, where there will be an in-person learning opportunity as well as a sandbox option. The pathway program has had 333 enrollments as of this spring. The courses offered, we have 4 semester modules currently. That's construction exploration, basic grade and construction math, equipment fundamentals, and basic equipment maintenance. The curriculum was developed in partnership with Local 49 to prepare students for all aspects of life and work in the industry. As I said earlier, the vast majority of our students are part-time students that stay in their brick-and-mortar schools and simply enroll for these classes. The coursework is delivered online in partnership with Minnesota Virtual Academy, and again, an in-person learning opportunity at Wright Tech with a sandbox component. For students, obviously with 165 school districts that we partner with, you couldn't find a schedule that it would work for everybody to fit that at the time of their schedule. So all of the sessions are recorded so students can watch those when it does fit into their schedule. Mary?
So the Virtual Academy, we always ask how do we get that hands-on component? And so we have grown this. When we first started, I think we had 3 events? Mm-hmm. 3 events our very first year, and that has grown tremendously. We will have several different events this year. I think we're up to
10. Offered 10 hands-on events this year.
Yep. Ames Construction, Ziegler Cat, Central Lakes College, and Local 49 Training Center are just some of those. We also were at Brennan Marine and had a marine experience this fall, which was a new add. They get seat time in the equipment. They actually are running the equipment. When we are up at Central Lakes College here in a few weeks, students will actually be out in the field and they'll be walking equipment as well as doing different grade stakes and different things, so very exciting. This explores them not only to just operating equipment, but we talk about welding, we talk about mechanics, we talk about those durable skills too that you mentioned earlier, not just running the equipment. This is a triple win. I always think of how can we have a triple win? You hear things all the time, but this is a triple win opportunity. You can get an elective credit, you can get college credit, and you can get credits for your registered apprenticeship.
We also take workforce development very seriously, and we want to make certain that anybody who does what we ask them to do with the hope that there's an opportunity at the end of it, we make no guarantees, but we do put our best foot forward. We've brought on two career navigators that work at the Local 49 Training Center specifically to work with these students, those who explore and decide this is the career field for them. They work with our career navigators, and their job is to help connect them to opportunity in the industry, as well as help mentor them through their registered apprenticeship program.
So this is kind of an exciting map. I wish I had to overlay those fancy things, because the last time that I was here testifying 2 years ago, there were some areas we hadn't touched upon. So we've really strategically tried to hit all those different areas. It looks like we still have work to do. My goal is that this will be all blue by the end of this next biennium. That would be our goal. So we've really strategically sent staff out and had different events. We've also partnered with different organizations as well to make sure that we're covering the whole entire state.
Next, Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, we have another testifier. Marley Sherbin from Caledonia actually went through the Pathway program and is a registered apprentice with Local 49 today.
Yeah, please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Sir Chairman and members of the committee. I am Marley Sherbin from Caledonia, Minnesota. I am 20 years old, almost 21. And July will be the marking date of being in the Pathway program, or being since being in the Pathway program 3 years ago. I was able to fit in the Pathway program during the senior year of my high school, during 21 to 22, fitting two of those courses each semester during my study halls at the end of the day. So during those study halls, I was able to then watch the recording sessions along with getting our notes done. It's not only was it a virtual learning, but it did have a hands-on criteria with doing math, with grades and stakes, even going out in our area and finding equipment that we may not have noticed before. Currently, I am a crane operator with Lunda Construction and working in Austin, Minnesota on our I-90 bridge projects. The Pathway has grown significantly since I was originally in it, with maybe 30 students going out on our field trips that year, to now hearing that we're reaching 100 students with their parents coming out to the training center to get hands-on experience with our technicians, with our operators, our instructors, and I'm so proud to be a part of that and see where it's gone today.
Thanks for your testimony. Amazing that you're working on the I-90 project. That's just great. Thanks. Really good. Great for our state. Thank you. And so back to continuing with the presentation, yes? Is that Jenny Winkler? Is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure, yeah.
And thank you, Marley, for being here with us today. She's actually on a break from work to be able to provide testimony with us today. So
yeah,
I will never forget, she was at a hands-on event and came in off the crane and said, mark my words, I will be a crane operator someday.
And well, and there you go. And operating it. Wow, just amazing.
Next, we just had a quote from Ames Construction, said, no question, the hands-on events we do for the operating engineer pathway are the best bang for our efforts in recruiting young operators. The impact on the schools, thanks to our partnership with all of you and industry partners, there has been no negative budgetary impact to local school districts in the communities, provided the students pass the course. Upon the student's successful completion of the course, the district is fully reimbursed for the cost of those courses. And this lets the district keep the focus of what's in the best interest of students and their families at the forefront rather than have to make difficult decisions between what might be best for the students and the impact on their budget. The fact that the pathway has been successful, of course, means that what sufficed for program funding last year, we're asking for some additional funding and support to make sure that we still are able to offer the school districts a reimbursement for the cost of the courses and continue to get students enrolled in the pathway program. And that's our presentation here for you today.
Good, thank you so much. Anybody else who wishes to testify on the bill from the public? So not seeing anything, we'll close testimony then. Member questions, comments? Representative Johnson, Wayne Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Schultz, for bringing this, and thank you for bringing this forward. I'm from southeastern Minnesota, so I know the Houston area quite well, and I was able to visit with the 49ers after I was elected, and they were telling me about this program and how the virtual part of it, and it's really good to hear about this program because growing up in southeastern Minnesota, I know some of the challenges of receiving the opportunities that are available up in the cities, you know, and being able to do something that's virtual like this and have them learn a trade like this and also be aware of it. One of the challenges in the schools, and it can be even in the bigger schools, is to learn trade opportunities and a great opportunity to get out there. And my son is an example. He was looking at a four-year school until he stumbled into electricians, and has a great life going right now. And so thank you for offering this. I think it's a great opportunity to bring those out state in and have the opportunity to learn the trades and maybe even have an opportunity to stay down in the area that they grew up in, which I think we desperately need is more people down there and grow out that area. I also think it's another example of how important that we continue getting broadband out throughout the state, and that as more and more training is made available, we have to make sure that we have good broadband that doesn't disconnect, that provides the best video and the best training there. And that is going to be another key as we move forward with these opportunities. And thank you for bringing forward. This is a great program, and I think it's definitely something that I would love to support going forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'll bump Chair Baker to the Representative Berg's on the list, but I'll go to you, Chair Baker, if you have something you want to say now. And then go
just ahead. Just super quick, Chair. Mr. Chair. Yeah. Thank you. Again, thank you for bringing the bill forward. To the testifiers, I know you're asking for more money than you did before because of popularity. Have you hit the capacity where you've actually had to turn kids away at this point? Or are we getting close to that? I'm just kind of looking at the kind of the capacity, and have you had to turn other people away in the past?
Jenny Winkler, is that to you, I think? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, one time a couple of years ago, we had to turn students away because we were at capacity. We vowed to do our utmost to not have to do that again. So since that time, we have not. We try to always have a robust team of teaching staff that are able to teach these courses.
Chair Baker?
Mr. Chair, great program, a great bill. Thank you very much.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to restore balance and compliment Representative Schultz for bringing this bill. just really quick, this is a fantastic program. I have a non-traditional learner, my youngest son, and so the idea of a four-year school, continuation of school ahead of him was very daunting. So I appreciate that this offers kids, while they're still in high school, another alternative to be successful and to find something that they love doing. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I'll just note the bill provides for a report every year. My understanding is that that's been true in the past appropriations from the legislature as well. And maybe I don't recall having seen that. And so if you all as testifiers, oh, you're holding it right there. All right, well, maybe provide a copy. We'll get it out to members, the most recent report. I'll ask Mr. Reese and others to help make that happen. I think would be useful. All right, anything else from members? Not seeing anything. Representative Schultz, I'll give you the last word on your bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to each of our testifiers. Thank you, Marley, and congratulations on the success that you're already having. This bill is about expanding access and expanding outreach so that we can get to every corner of the state. I will just mention for the record, as someone who represents five very rural counties, I have both ends of the spectrum. We're the larger schools of the 13 different school districts that I represent. Have already installed this program or are working to do so. In addition, one of the smallest school districts in my district, Swanville Public School, that has 356 total students, which is approximately 27 kids in a class, also has had students as a part of this. And so I'm excited about this and the way that this is going to enhance our economy for years to come and especially prepare a great and excellent workforce. So thank you to everyone and for the great bipartisan sponsors. Thank you, Representative Pete Johnson, for adding his name this morning, and Representative Wayne Johnson, you are welcome. There's space for you to be a co-author of this bill too. Thank you.
Representative Schultz wants to achieve the coveted double Johnson. Been achieved by past bills. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Thanks to the testifiers and to our amazing crane operator. Just keep it up to building I-90. That's fabulous. With that, the chair lays over House File 1003 for possible inclusion in a future budget bill. Members, so this has been a little bit unusual scheduling today because we've been thinking that we might be able to go into the evening. It turned out we weren't able to do that, but there's a lot of bills we're going to be trying to get through, so I feel like we may have been a little more elongated on some of these bills than we might have otherwise. We're going to be doing a lot of galloping in future days. I want to call on Chair Baker, see if he has a comment he wants to make about the next hearing coming up tomorrow, and we're going to continue the partnership. Chair Baker.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, tomorrow, just remind members, we're going to be kind of just touching on a little bit of the paid family House File 1976 for a little bit that we didn't finish up. We aren't going to plan on spending a lot of time on it. Again, that bill is still being laid over. And then we have a number of bills that I'm trying to also assist with making sure that we get more of them heard for the work of the committee. So that's really what's coming up tomorrow, members. Can't wait to see you all back at 8:15 a.m.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, and so Chair Baker and I are in touch about trying to fit in bills, some of these hearings on grant proposals as we're able to. Anything else from members? Not seeing anything. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.